It is Saturday, January 15th, 2010. Wait, 2011. 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, we'll be doing, what are we going to be doing today, Al?
Let's do a Geek Speak technology show.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. What kind of stuff will we be covering?
We'll talk about technology and various things. Why are you asking me this? Because
you can't, you can't tell that I'm stalling?
Yeah. Okay.
Because I want to say that it's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. First half of the show, we'll be covering the geek news. In the second half, we'll be taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. Take the phone number down now if you'd like to call in. 1-800-655-5877. Today's theme song is by Dave Patera from Pet Star Music. Thank you so much, Dave, for writing this. If you'd like to participate by adding music to our show and themes and images and stuff like that, please do so. Creative Commons Endeavor, which means you can do whatever you'd like with our show as long as you credit us.
And don't make money off of it.
I'm
don't
okay.
We have that?
No.
Oh, we don't?
No, I'm
you
like...
You can make money off of
you
us?
Can do, you can make
if,
money off
if
us.
If they make money off of us, please let us know how you did it.
Because we're interested. 10 years, we didn't make any money.
Yeah.
My name is Lyle Troxell. On the air with me is Miles Elam. He's a computer hacker, programmer, and political junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
What's the shirt?
Oh, it's The Amazing Meeting 8.
Oh, cool. You went to that?
Yes. We have a show where we interviewed the president of the James Randi Educational Foundation.
That's right, the JREF. Well, thank you very much for being here, Miles. And we also have Al Luckow. Al Luckow is a new media architect. And hi.
Hello, everybody.
So we're going to start out, actually, with Al's first news story, which I am compelled to ask. Well, I'm excited by it because I want one. Local company in Santa Cruz is making an attachment for an iPhone. What does it do?
Yeah, it's Redfish Instruments, and they're located right here in Santa Cruz. And they're making a digital multimeter.
Multimeter, sure.
You know, I call it multimeter, but I've heard people say multimeter.
Hmm.
Must be them people up there north, up in the north, calling it multimeter. Anyway, this thing is a multimeter, and it hooks to your iPhone and uses the iPhone OS to do all sorts of cool, readouts. You know, if you're familiar with any kind of electronics, you know that a multimeter is something very important. You know, you're testing voltage,
so
current,
I'm excited
resistance.
Because that's kind of what I do, and I was just using a multimeter the other day, and it'd be awesome to be able to have that in my pocket all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like the device is about the size of an iPhone as well, though, so it kind of doubles your
pocket. Yeah, and
your
the other thing that something a device like this
has
does
yes.
is it allows you to make your measurements and then save that data. Normally, a multimeter, you know, you, like, see the data, and then, like, you either act on it, and then it's gone as soon as you...
Right.
But this, since you're connecting to a phone, you're able to, you know, acquire the data, save it, email it, post it, whatever you want to do to further analyze what you're testing.
That's right.
Which is kind of nice because, you know, any kind of meter, you're just sort of, it's either on or off, but you don't, that data's gone.
Right.
You know, and saving the data, and data today is the name of the game. I just sort of somewhat unrelated, I just bought a, it's by iHealth, it's a blood pressure monitor. Okay, so you can take your blood pressure,
mm-hmm.
and it connects to your iPhone.
Okay, that's awesome.
And it's got a little app that you're able to just press, you know, test. And then it does the blood pressure reading, and then it just automatically brings those numbers right into your phone, so then you can, and it stores them, so you're able to view charts. It makes, you know, bar charts out of it. You know, you're able to send it. You can send it a tab delineated file. So devices like this, you know, that are external, that are utilizing the OS of a smartphone and then storing that data, this is a whole new generation of a type of product. I think it's great. And seeing this one just right here in Santa Cruz, that's...
Well, having the user interface in your hand all the time, you're always used to it,
mm-hmm.
Having that device and then being able to connect to it. And sure enough, this thing from Redfish mm-hmm. Instruments is a wirelessly connected to your to your iPhone. So you're not even having to plug it in, right? You just have it with you. If you have it with you, you turn on the app on your iPhone and
you're
playing with it.
I didn't even notice that.
Very cool.
That's wireless. Wow.
You know, it's really common when you're dealing with electronics, your voltmeter kind of gets embedded in the system, right? You're plugging in, you're checking a meter, you're doing something, and you've got wires all over the place, and it's kind of a mess. And being able to have that hooked in and then with your phone look at the levels while you're not engaged in electronics of it, it's pretty cool.
So if it's wireless, you could hook it up to your device and then say, okay, I'm going to go in the garage and flick the switch.
Yeah, you could.
And then you can know what it changed because it's wireless and it'll give you the reading.
I wonder what distance it is. I'm assuming it's Bluetooth, but maybe not. Well, any case, since it's a local company, I hope that Redfish comes on. I've already made a call.
Yeah, it'd be great to talk to them.
We'll talk about them. But let's go on with other things for today. Miles, hi.
Hi. I'm going to talk a little bit about Chrome, the web browser.
I love it.
A recent change they made was they are dropping support for the video codec known as H.264.
Okay.
And putting, and they already had support for what's called WebM and Ogg Theora. Mm-hmm. Those are two other video codecs. But they are dropping H.264.
WebM is the Google open source.
Yes, based upon V8.
So why are they dropping H.264? H.264 is a codec that Apple uses for all their content, basically.
Right, and it is also controlled by the MPEG Licensing Association, I think it's called,
Miles,
MPEG Law.
I got to ask, because of my New Year's resolution, what's a codec? What's a video codec?
A codec, codec is a abbreviation for compression decompression, and it's turning video, what we see, if we look in the outside world, contrary to what you might be told, it's not digital at all.
Okay.
Totally analog. You have wavelengths of light and it's hitting you, which is an analog device, being processed by an analog device, which is your brain. But to turn it into, excuse me.
Do you want a drink of water?
Yeah, apparently.
Let me take over for a second.
I got it. So, sorry about that. So, when you have all that analog information, you need to convert it to a digital signal. And in addition to that, you want to compress it.
Make it as small a file as possible.
Right.
Okay.
And that's what a compression algorithm does. And then once you have it in that form, you go, oh, wait, now I need to do it in reverse. I need to take that compressed form, put it into its uncompressed digital form, and then convert it into an analog signal.
And I'm assuming that there's different ways of doing that, and that's what these different codecs are.
Yes.
They all do it a little bit differently.
And that's why you can send big videos over bandwidth, because it compresses it to a small file, and that's the whole key to it.
But you'll also notice that over the past 20 years or so, that when video was first really coming into its own on computers, that it was really blocky before, it didn't perform as well, it wasn't as high a resolution, or they interlaced it so that only every other frame was rendered.
I've looked at my earlier videos that I put up on my website and stuff, and they're always really, really small. Like, not a big, and I'm like, where's the original file for this? Because, of course, now you can put up full-size video. Right. So, because the compressions have gotten smaller and better?
They've gotten better, and also our ability to have larger files has increased. So, like, Blu-ray uses H.264.
One of these issues, though, of all of these different formats is that there's patents and trademark, or there's patents involved, and so different companies own the codec, if you will, and they let people use it or they don't let people use it. Is that why Chrome is exactly why.
Okay. Google bought the company Onto, who developed VP8, which is what WebM was based upon. And then
warning, lots of acronyms in this section.
Yeah. And then re-released it as a BSD license code and said,
what's BSD?
It just means you can use the software any way you want as long as you give credit for where it came from. And or you keep the copyright notice.
So Google bought something and then went, you know what, everyone should be able to use this. And so they released all rights to it and said everybody can use this.
Their official statement is, and I should go back and say, there's a reason why all this is happening is because with HTML5, new version of HTML, there is a tag called video. And it was supposed to simplify all of the plug-in things. Normally, for like YouTube, you had to load up a Flash movie, and then for Netflix, you had like Silverlight.
Basically, since the dawn of the internet, to play any video you've ever seen is actually a plug-in to the browser. It's something else.
It was actually a huge, hacks upon hacks
and
upon hacks.
There's over and over again. There's been security vulnerabilities in these things. There's been, you never know if your browser, the person that's visiting your website knows it has what players. It's always been kind of a disaster. As a video, as a web developer.
So they just create a video tag, and it's easier for developers.
Sure.
Just say video tag source equals here's my movie.
That's right.
So all I want to do is play it. And
so when you say that the browsers actually have the codecs built in, the video tag can play those different types of decompression, compression things.
Yes.
Right?
Okay. And embed them onto the page in the
nice
spot that you want it to be. And Google is large enough that they'd be able to pay any licensing fees. I mean, yes, they have YouTube, so they have this massive treasure trove of videos, and so they have to pay the fee for that. And they'd have to pay like 10 cents to the MPEG LA organization every time someone downloaded Chrome. Like to eat the licensing costs.
So when you're saying, and if anybody puts the H.264 thing inside their software, it costs some money for them to release
software that can encode it and decode it. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
And
who makes that money? Apple? Do they own H.264? Or is it some weird?
Apple's one of the folks
the
that are part of it. Yeah.
Okay. Go on.
But not the only one by any means.
Mm-hmm.
And so Google's thought on this was like, how much money is this going to cost us? How much is this going to cost a startup that's trying to have this disruptive technology to make something great that is going to get, that won't be able to get off the ground because they have to pay these licensing fees? So they are taking a cue from the Firefox browser folks, Mozilla Foundation, and saying, we're not going to support H.264 at all. If someone puts in some plugin that adds in H.264 support, that's their choice. But they want the baseline that everyone can support to be a codec that doesn't cost anything, that doesn't have any patent encumbrances and the like. So, but now you have a big battle going on between Firefox, Chrome, Opera, and they're the ones who support WebM and mm-hmm. Ogg Theora. And then you have Microsoft and Apple on the other side, talking about the biggest browser
right.
vendors. Apple and Microsoft on the other side that don't support WebM and Ogg Theora, but they do support H.264.
Okay, so
web developers are not caught in the middle.
This magical solution of let's get rid of all these plugins and everything, let's just have a video tag. Now it's potentially even worse because now the video tag doesn't even work the same on all of them.
Well, with a grain of salt, it means that you have to encode your video in two different codecs
and then detect it, or just put
no
it in the video tag.
Video tag, how that works, and this is a great thing, that's nice foresight. This happens with the video tag and the audio tag, the new audio tag just for audio.
Mm-hmm.
In that you can put a video tag in, if your browser doesn't support it, including older browsers, whatever's inside that video tag gets executed.
So can you put another video tag inside that?
So you can put another video tag inside that has a different file.
Codec.
Yeah, video that has a different codec, encoded with a different codec. And if that doesn't work, you have inside of that video tag...
A flash player. Interesting. Okay, so I guess it's time to update some of my sites.
And in other news, just to finish up, Flash actually, Adobe has announced that they're going to be putting the WebM or VP8 codec into the Flash player.
And they also support H.264?
And they support H.264.
So they've solved the problem. If you get that plugin, you're fine anyway.
Right.
But then again, if the browser... Yeah, okay. Well, let's move on. Thank you, Miles, for the update on on Chrome and such.
I left behind like half our audience
and,
with that conversation.
And the big thing is that when you talk about the different codecs for video, when you talk about Ogg Theora and WebM, which are different but both free, if you will. Free as
both
in...
Both patent unencumbered, yeah.
As in rights free, not free lunch. And then
they are free to use, and they are free of any licensing arrangements.
Right. And then you have H.264, which for us is free to use, but isn't of license. It has license restrictions. And, of course, the companies that are producing it isn't free. It's not free for them to use. So you have this situation where those two things are that argument right there is making web developers like us have to make multiple versions of video files.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, we still have to deal with legacy browsers, which don't have video tags, so we have to deal with Flash and QuickTime plugins. It's a mess out there.
Yeah, and the MPEG LA consortium has said that they're not going to charge large fees for the licensing of it for the next 5 years. They haven't said what they're going to do after that. And for those of you who have been in web development for a while, it sounds a little too much like the GIF patent from CompuServe, later Unisys, 10, 15 years ago?
Sure.
Same thing. So if you
the image tag, IMG tag in an HTML, you could put two different things. You could put JPEG or GIF. And GIF was patent encumbered at that time. But
no one knew about it.
Right. And so all these GIF images came out, and the web was full of them, all these animated things early on, if you recall. And then all of a sudden the company's like, by the way, you got to start paying. And it became this big hassle, of course, because you can't just pull that stuff out of the browser or the web breaks. It's really interesting. Is that a good summary?
Yeah.
Good. Let's move on. A lot of people know that we are using IRC now to do the backline chat. You're welcome to join us. We're at on freenode.net. GeekSpeak KOSP is our chat room. You can get to that by geekspeak.org if you'd like. And right now, we already have somebody from Illinois listening in. James, thanks for listening in. He's chatting with us. He normally listens to the podcast, but today he's listening live. He had to wake up early. And thanks, James, for doing that. We also, at the end of the show today, only the podcast version, we're going to have a little giveaway. So if you're normally just an on-air listener, you might want to go get our podcast, because we'll have a little thing at the end of that to get a free something. But you have to listen in to find out what it is. Al, you heard my introduction to the show today. Mm-hmm. It was a mess. I asked you to fill in. I didn't have the theme song set up. But the big thing was I missed the year. This first time yet that I've said 2010 instead of 2011. Of course, it always happens to everybody in January. But we haven't really – I think the reason is we haven't really closed down on 2010.
That's true.
We need to kind of wrap that up. So can you help me out with that?
Yeah. Well, let's look at the internet in 2010, if we look at the numbers. Now, these numbers are gathered by – a company called Royal Pingdom, and this is basically a hosting company, and they've dedicated a substantial portion of their service to finding out these esoteric numbers, which I think people will find interesting, such as the number of emails sent in 2010 is 107 trillion, which is kind of a lot.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. There's 255 million websites as of December 2010. In 2010, 21.4 million websites were added. There was 88.8 million .com domain names, not to mention the 13 million .net, 8.6 million .org.
Which is why when you go to a registrar and you type in a name, go like, this would be a great name for a site. It taken.
Right.
3 years ago.
This is my boss has a comic strip on his door, and I can't recall which comic strip it is, but it's two guys sitting in a jungle, and they got like a laptop in front of them. And they're like, oh man, Amazon.com's taken. Because of course it is. I love that idea. Every name's taken.
Yeah. Did they also count how much of that email, that huge amount of email?
Oh, a lot of it's spam.
Yeah, it would be spam.
Yeah. There's all these things like, social media. You know how many tweets there were in 2010? 25 billion tweets. Okay, 25 billion.
25 and billion
in just 2010.
That's a lot of attention deficit.
In just 2010,
what were you saying?
100 million people were added to Twitter. So there's 100 million more people on Twitter.
At the end of 2010.
At the end, 100 million more.
100 million.
So right now there's
what's the population of the U.S.?
There's 175 million people on Twitter as of September of last year. Okay, because that's the one that the latest figures was. That's 175 million people using Twitter. There's 250 million people that are new on Facebook this year.
Wow.
250 million. There's 600 million on Facebook right now. These are big numbers. These are like, financial bailout numbers. I mean, the number of videos watched per month on Facebook is 2 billion.
Wow.
2 billion videos on Facebook.
What about in YouTube videos? Doesn't have the numbers?
Yeah. The number of videos watched per day on YouTube is 2 billion.
2 billion?
2 billion. There's 2 plus billion on Facebook, it says. There's 35 hours of video uploaded to YouTube every minute. So every minute, there's 35 more hours.
Wow.
It's crazy. I mean, and there's a whole bunch of these really cool statistics. 5 billion photos are hosted by Flickr. There's 3,000 plus photos uploaded every minute.
If a picture's worth 1,000 words, that's a lot of words.
That's many words.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at the current rate, the number of photos uploaded to Facebook per year is 36 billion. So these are some cool numbers if you're doing, stats, if you're trying to prove something or whatever. I'm going to post a link to this.
They're overwhelming numbers.
They're like ridiculous, crazy numbers. Like,
the thing that's amazing to me about the 35 hours every minute is you really could right now just pick 1 minute. And I wonder if Google, you could actually find the time, search videos by time uploaded and then watch those 35 hours after the next day and a half.
So you'd be able to watch 1 minute.
Pick a minute. Yeah. A minute every day and a half.
My God. I mean, it's just like, this is crazy.
I wonder how bad all of it is.
A lot of it, you know, I mean, the web is the world's most successful open source movement.
Are we,
you know?
Are we now finally in a society that's creating almost as much as we're consuming? I guess probably not, right?
I don't know. I mean,
Twitter, you have a lot of little contributions.
Sure, sure.
The big contributions
are... Hey, it's not
are...
the size that matters, man. It's the integrity.
Well, it is the size. It's the size and volume as opposed to a size
right.
as
but
a
like the video uploads,
individual quantity.
35 hours every minute. That... You know, that's some serious content, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
oh,
it could just be somebody sitting in front of a video screen talking about something that no one
Yeah, those are riveting, by the way.
Well, of the people, you know, there's 7.
We should switch to YouTube videos for GeekSpeak, which is also the same exact same thing.
Speaking of Twitter, there's 7.7 million people following Lady Gaga.
Wow.
She's Twitter's most followed user.
Oh, now I got
2010.
Know. Hey, so I'm on Twitter. Follow me, everybody. Okay? My Twitter handle is Lyle. L-Y-L-E. See if my numbers can get boosted up.
Yeah.
I won't get the Lady Gaga, I don't think, this week, though.
That's crazy. These are crazy numbers.
Crazy numbers.
Yeah.
Miles, I hate to even ask, but talking about crazy, go ahead.
Speaking of Twitter.
Oh.
Someone who I admire greatly. I met, actually, at the Amazing Meeting 8 this past summer. Phil Plait, PhD, astronomer, has worked for NASA, has a wonderful show called Bad Universe. Highly recommend. This comes from him watching Twitter, seeing which thing's trending, and one of them was the word Zodiac. Now, anyone who has any background knowledge in astronomy or, you know, science in general goes,
what do you mean? Astronomy? Astrology? You're stuck in astronomy.
Anyone who sees, like, knows anything about astronomy or science in general goes, wait, Zodiac, why is that trending? Why is that important? Wait.
Exactly.
Which is why Lyle gave that skeptical preamble.
Yes.
What happened was he was seeing this going, what's going on here? And says he got an email from someone saying there's some DJs on the radio saying how astronomers were rearranging the Zodiac and messing with it and by fiat, like trying to change things around. So just to head this off, because it is trending in Facebook as well, we'll just do our little part to counteract the noise.
Sorry, when you're saying trending, you're using this as like a... I'm supposed to know what this means.
It means that more people are using that word. So... Twitter watches to see which words are being used the most. What are people talking about the most?
These millions of people.
Right.
And then they kind of highlight those.
It's a popularity contest.
Okay. So if there was a giant earthquake, all of a sudden that would pop in there.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So the earth wobbles.
Yes.
We all know this. Or you should know this.
Yes. You mean that it's rotational, it's like a top spinning.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. This has a certain...
Yes, but does anyone else understand what we're talking about, Miles?
Okay, when you're... The Earth is on an axis, right? So summertime
it spins on
is...
axis 24 hours. In 24 hours, it spins around.
Well, it rotates on that. Yes, it rotates on that axis. And when the... So it's kind of slanted. So when the slant is on the northern part of the...
When the northern part of the Earth is kind of away from the sun, then it's winter time.
It's winter time. And then when the northern part is pointing towards the sun, it's summertime. That's how seasons work.
Right. For us. Yeah.
And
for us, yes.
But it's very much like if you spun a top and it's spinning around, it's on an axis. It's not straight up and down a lot of times. It's on a diagonal. And given the sufficient time, that top is going to have the axis point in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing happens with the Earth, just a little more slowly.
How slow are we talking about?
I'm talking about... on the scale of probably hundreds of thousands or millions of years to do what a top is doing.
Mm-hmm.
At the
Which
same,
basically means that winter right now, though we kind of experience it in the middle of December, January, right in that time frame right now, we're coming to the winter. In 10,000 years or something like that, it actually might be in June.
Probably more than 10,000 years, but
I don't
sure.
know the timelines, but that's the general idea is that it shifts.
Right. And as it happens... Over the last 1,000 years, or 1 to 2,000 years, we have noticed a shift. We can see that wobble by the fact that a couple thousand years ago, when astrology tables were first being composed, when you looked up in the sky, when people were born at a certain time, the sun was in I mean, where the sun would be,
yeah,
was in the constellation of Aries or in the constellation of Pisces.
We're talking about is if you look directly away from the sun, the earth, if you're like line the sun up to the earth and then look behind that,
yeah,
whatever sign is directly away from the sun or directly towards the sun. I always forget this.
Where the sun's path is at nighttime if you look at that same spot in the sky.
Right. So it's directly away from the sun is the sign that we're talking about?
Sure.
Okay. All right. I always thought it was the
Well, it's not exactly because it's...
Yeah. I thought the sun was the one that was important, like, but I can never remember.
The sun is.
Okay, go on.
And then you have moon rising. And all right. So...
So a long time ago, if you were born on a certain day,
April 13th, that's why you saw...
You would be in a certain astrological sign.
Right. Okay. You were in Aries. Mm-hmm. You know, but as it turns out... as it turns out, that's what they saw.
Right.
But because the Earth was like a top, it shifted a little bit on its axis. And so now, 2,000 years later, if you actually were aligning with the stars, that person who is an Aries is actually a Pisces. Because Pisces
is
what's
adjusting?
Actually...
I thought it was adjusted all the time. I thought it was always talked about what sign you're in rather than what date it is.
Not so much, because if they were... That adjustment would have been what was considered Aries back in the day is now Pisces. It hasn't shifted that much.
So they have to shift the whole zodiac over a little bit, is what you're saying. Because it's
they would have to, yeah. If
they want to be accurate.
Okay, so what's the news?
Not that there's any accuracy to it.
Exactly. What's the news story?
Well, it's trending in Twitter, so we're trying to counteract that and say, like, watch out for this. Not only is astrology kind of male bovine excrement, but it is also not astronomers coming out and trying to poop in everyone's, you know, pool. This has been happening for a long time. People have recognized this for a long time. And now someone has talked about,
they're
for
sensationalizing
example.
Sensationalizing it.
Yeah.
They're saying there's a new astrological sign now.
Yeah. Ophiuchus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ophiuchus, which is the serpent bearer. And the reason why why the serpent bearer wasn't included with the original astrological symbols is because it's a lot more faint, a lot harder to see.
Okay.
But we can see him quite clearly now.
But, I mean, what you see, if you will, is just a region of area in the sky, which you claim looks like something.
The fact that three stars in a row looks like a belt and we can somehow make a person, a warrior around it, we call it Orion, it's a useful way to remember where the stars are, but that's not really...
There's not really
a god up there.
And 100,000 years...
The stars are actually really far apart from each other.
Yeah.
And 100,000 years from now, they won't look the same. The constellations will not be the same in the sky.
Right, of course.
Will be unrecognizable.
Hmm. Really? Just 100,000 years?
I think so.
No. A sun lasts... A star lasts a lot longer than that.
That's true.
Oh,
but our position doesn't.
Its position doesn't.
Our position relative to them doesn't.
Yeah.
Expansion of the universe?
I don't think you're going to see that in 100,000 years.
Okay, maybe I'm...
Anyway, very cool. Thank you very much for that. Let's do that mid-break thing that we like to do on Geek Speak. And in just a second, Al, I'm going to ask you to do the geek bit of the week, if you don't mind.
Sure. So,
my name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Miles Elam and Al Luckow. And answering the phones, Rick is in the other room, and you're welcome to give Rick a call and get your voice on air. You can ask us anything you'd like today. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. It's a toll-free number, and I'll give that again. But first, the geek bit of the week.
Yeah, there's a kind of a cool little app that I ran across called Ohm Guitar, and it runs on the iPhone. What it does is it allows you to play guitar on your iPad. So you actually strum the strings
right on the screen,
and you're able to change your chords. So it actually allows you to play a real sounding, it's an acoustic sounding thing, but I don't know that I would compare it to a guitar. It's just that it does sound a lot like a guitar, and you can sing to it. And we've linked to a person shown doing it, and it's pretty convincing, and it's kind of interesting to see a person walk up with an iPad and just sort of strum it. And then you still have to have skill to be able to play it, but it's an interesting little doodad.
And Rick or somebody in the other room mentioned when they saw it, it looked a lot more like an autoharp than a guitar, because, of course, it's...
Or an accordion. It's kind of like, because you kind of press buttons to change chords.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I think, well, that's kind of like an accordion. Instead of playing the keys, you're strumming.
Well, an autoharp is like that, right? So you push down things.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
This is the song they're using.
brains. Pour your misery down.
Anyways, yeah. There's a video on it.
It's called Om Guitar. All right. Om Guitar.
Moving on. So you're welcome to call him. Thank you very much for that, Geek Bit.
I got another Geek Bit, if you don't mind.
Okay, go ahead.
There's a wonderful video going around, if you haven't seen it yet, and it is the known universe. In other words, it's going from the Himalayas and then panning out until you hit the edge of what we know of as the known universe.
Okay, I've seen that. It's great.
It's very cool.
And so I'll put a link up.
The known universe is also the visible universe. It's the universe that we can see.
Right. If we can't see it, then we don't. Right. Really know anything about it. But yeah.
Somebody had asked how to get into the chat room. Rich emailed in.
And it's done
to
scale, yeah.
And he's curious about how we have this chat room going and how to get into it.
How to get in the chat room?
How to get in there.
Well, I wrote this great description on how to do that on my personal website. So go to lyle.troxel.com, and in the Tumblr feed down there, there's going to be a whole thing about the geeks are going to be on IRC. This description on how to
great.
Do it. Okay. So, moving on to the second half of the show, of course, you can call 800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. If you're not in front of a computer, or you don't want to figure out how to deal with IRC and adding into our channel and all that, then give us a call, because you can chat with us live that way. 1-800-655-5877. We will, of course, ask what your question or comment is, so you should probably have something to say. All right. The phone number, again, is 1-800-655-5877. Of course, that's toll-free. You're welcome to call us during the showtime only. But for those podcast listeners, end of the show, we'll give you something. Hopefully, give at least one of you something. Let's go on with some geek news as we're waiting for the calls to come in. I believe that it's Mr. Luckow's turn. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll just ask you about... Yeah, well, since we're talking about iPad, let's talk about iPhone.
Okay.
This is really interesting.
Well, this sort of represents a little bit of a paradigm shift in giving people power. And I am talking about an iPhone situation, but it can work for any smartphone. What's just happened is a South Korean filmmaker has just debuted what is believed to be the first cinematic standard movie shot on an iPhone. Because as you know, the iPhone shoots in HD, which a lot of smartphones do.
Wait, when you say standard, you mean like full size, full length?
The way it's described is the first cinema standard movie.
Ah, okay. So duration and such.
Yes. And
all on iPhone or
right,
multiple iPhones.
The whole thing has been done on an iPhone. The guy's name is Park Chan-wook. And he's done movies before. One of them called Old Boy and another one called Mother. But this one's called Paramanjang, and it's a fantasy horror movie. But very interesting. The movie cost $130,000 to make.
And they didn't spend much on cameras.
I don't think so. Probably that's all for like props and people and stuff.
It's very expensive to make a movie, that's for sure.
But kind of a cool idea. I mean, you always wonder what you can do.
Do they have samples of it? A trailer up inside?
Actually, there's a lot of links and there's a couple little trailers. Oh, but awesome. When I did this, I thought people are going to probably be, well, that's, I want to see more of that kind of thing because I don't really understand, you know, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. So I also posted some links. These will be up after the show at geekspeak.org on our show page of people who have shot movies on iPhones. And so you can see how the quality is, and it's actually pretty good. And then I also put a couple of videos, links on there that people not only shot the movie on the iPhone, but also edited it on the iPhone using the iMovie application that's on the phone. So basically, you shoot and edit, and everything you did is just done straight on the phone.
Wow.
And there's a bunch of examples of that, too. So it's kind of cool.
Do you have the iPhone, iMovie on the iPhone? Is it pretty good?
I actually used it the day it came out, and I tried it, and I made a little movie with titles and music. And it took me, I didn't look at any directions, I didn't do anything, and I did it, and I just did it straight. And then it took me about, 15 minutes, and
I was
done.
That's the thing with video cameras. I don't know, probably everybody else has this experience. I have many DV tapes, just stacks of them I've never touched.
I know.
Having it run in the computer automatically and then be able to post it quickly.
Or to just do it when you're just sitting around, you think, oh, I just have those videos, and you just pull it in and just sort of dink around with it and make it kind of neat looking. Yeah. There's a couple other things that I posted too that are videos that people had brought shot on their phone and then brought onto their computer and then used iMovie to sort of, iMovie has a number of templates that are sort of canned, but they really kind of make, they're really simple and they kind of make things look sort of cool.
All right. Full feature film being made on an iPhone.
Bunch of links.
Links and samples of that up on geekspeak.org.
Is there an app that will make people better cinematographers though?
Well, this is one of the things
that's my problem.
It's the person behind the camera. It always comes down to that.
Yeah, I was thinking about that with the iPhone. I mean, the depth of field isn't very good unless you're in a really close macro shot. So when you're in general in a shot, like, you know, you can't differentiate the
background. Well, you can. Yeah, you can. You can tap on a certain area within the screen and it focuses on that area.
It does, but isn't the depth of field pretty lack of control? I mean, I guess you reduce the lighting in the room a little bit.
And in any case, you always have to deal with the lens. The lens is microscopic, so you're only going to, you know.
Well, a little bigger than microscopic. But
it's teeny weeny. How about that? It's a different technical term for you out there.
That's better.
Teeny weeny.
From Soquel, Randall, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. I have a question about strange link behavior.
Can you speak up a bit in your phone a bit? Strange link behavior? Go on. The louder you can get, the better. It's really faint.
Okay. What's happening is when I click on a link in one of my emails that brings me down to another link in the same email, normally the link that I go to is at the top of the screen, but now, for some strange reason, it's at the bottom of the screen, and then I have to manually scroll up again to actually read that part of the email.
Okay, I get what you're saying. So what you're saying is there's these email messages you get that have a whole bunch of HTML content, and there's links at the top. And the idea of the link is that you're supposed to click on the link, and it jumps you down the page until you can see that content block.
That's an anchor.
Right? Okay, right. So this is an HTML thing, just happens to be in the email client. Have you changed email clients? Are you using different email?
I'm using Mail.
Apple Mail?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. And when you're, just out of curiosity, are we talking about a link or in the email itself? Or are we talking about navigating the email, the different email messages?
It's
Is it one email message or multiple email messages?
You know what?
It happens on all my email messages.
You know what I think is happening? There's a thing about Apple Mail where you can split the pane. And you click the email message, and then the email shows up in the pane below it. I think that's what he's talking about.
Is that what you're talking
about? And what happened is the link on the panel below got closed, and so now he has to click on it and open the whole thing. And he liked it when he was able to see a list of his emails and just click on them and have them open in that bottom panel.
Is that what you're talking about?
I don't think so.
Well, it sounds like this problem happens all the time.
That's why I was trying to ask for clarity. I wasn't exactly sure.
Because an anchor in an email isn't really...
No, it's not common. So, Randall, just out of curiosity, in Mail, you have a list of all your emails. And you click on an email, and it's displaying the email?
Yeah, I open an email that has a bunch of links in it.
Okay.
That links to other links in the email.
Okay.
And...
Normally, it's just a rare type of email. It's the assumption I made the first time makes sense. So what you're saying is when you're inside the email message, you click on a link inside the email message and it scrolls you down lower into the page. And the problem is that it puts that link kind of at the bottom and then the content itself is below that. Is that right?
Exactly, yes.
Okay, so that I think has to do with the way that the email was formatted. Because this is an anchor tag in HTML, allows you to jump in page content. And so what's going on when you click on that link inside the email is it's jumping down to where the anchor tag is. And unfortunately, the anchor tag has been aligned wrong. Or it could be something wrong with Mail. To test this, this is hard to test because you'd have to... What you could do is save your the message you got as HTML and then open it in a browser and see how it operates. And I'm assuming it's the way the email was formatted. Who's formatting this email? Where is it coming from?
It's FreeCycle.
FreeCycle's links? Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I have FreeCycle up. Let me see if I can have the same problem.
You know, since you're looking that up for a second, I'm going to clarify this problem that people...
It won't help with Randall, but it'll help with other
people. Yes, there's a little tiny dot on the bottom of the mail message that's the bar, and you click on that and you drag that up, and it'll open your panel again to be able to view your emails as you click
them. Yeah, what we're talking
about
is when you kind of read email by... clicking on them and then they open up the bottom instead of double clicking and opening them. There's a little tiny dot that allows you to slide the roll up.
Yeah.
And to be clear, the FreeCycle is actually a Yahoo group, and if anyone cares. And I'm actually looking at mine right now to see what you're talking about. I think one thing is it doesn't necessarily download the email message, the email the entire time. Sometimes it caches it first, and if it's not totally loaded in, it can't jump down the page. So that could be part of the problem. But it's not one of those things we can fix online, unfortunately, because if it is a problem with your browser or your email client, it's not an easy fix, if you will, because you can't really.
The thing is that it was working properly.
For a long time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what caused it to change behavior.
Well, mine's working the exact same way. It jumps down to the top of it, but doesn't go down all the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And did you just upgrade to the most recent OS version?
Yes.
Yeah. So it probably is an OS version bug.
But it was also in the just previous.
It was. Interesting. So then it could be the way Yahoo's formatting the email. I mean, what you could do is just take a look at a very old message from them. If you've got an archive of mail from FreeCycle, I'm just going to do that. I'm going to jump back to 2009. Uh-huh. And it's doing the same thing. Okay, so it is an Apple Mail problem, not Yahoo's problem. And it's not really fixable, unfortunately, because Apple Mail is a closed proprietary application. You can't recompile it. You could open a bug with Apple and talk about it on their discussion forums and see if they'll fix it.
Okay.
But unfortunately, that's about it. If there's any email HTML programmers out there that know this problem that we're talking about and really understand it, I'd love your feedback. I'd love to hear what you have to say about it, whether it's a formatting issue of HTML or I believe it's an interface issue with the browser. And geeks, I'll show you after the show if you're like curious about how it works. Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Of course, I've lost track of who's waiting on the phone. Helen from Santa Cruz. Helen, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Listen, this question is going to sound a little bit embarrassing, but here it goes. I bought approximately a year ago, I bought a MacBook,
mm-hmm.
and I was under the assumption that it came with a modem, because I have a Mac, an iMac, and all the, you know, it's kind of an old iMac, but that one came with a modem inside.
Right, right. Apple stopped putting modems in their computers. And they didn't really mention it because they like to mention about added features, not removed features.
I know, and no one mentioned it to me.
Yeah, there are little plug-in USB dongles that give you one. And
so
these run about $50.
This is what happened. I went and after finding that out, I tried to get hold of a modem from Apple, from everyone here in Santa Cruz. No one had them. Absolutely none.
Yeah, I believe that.
And so I went, I had to go over the hill to Fry's, and there I bought a modem called Zoom.
Do you know what model of Zoom?
It's a Zoom. I'm looking at it right now. Well, where would the model be?
Probably on the back of it, there's like a little plastic plate.
Oh, it says S56K.
No. Anything else? Any other model numbers?
It's USB mini external.
There you go.
SKB92N90, it says. It's a USB mini external for Windows, Macintosh,
okay.
Linux computers.
All right, great. So you've got something that's supported by Mac.
So I thought that this was...
This should work.
Yeah, so
what you need to do, unfortunately, is don't trust the stuff that's with the packaging. You need to go up to the Zoom website to actually get the drivers. Now, this means that you've got to
go... Well, that's what they did. Yeah. I took it to Buys, to the Geeks, to have it installed. And I paid for them to have it installed, and they told me the same thing. They had to, that the disk, the CD that had come, they had to use something because they couldn't follow.
Did they get it working for you?
No. The thing is, it's not working. See, I'm not using a wireless because I don't want to for many reasons. So they keep telling me they can't test it because they don't have a
phone. They don't have a phone.
They don't have a phone.
Of course.
So I brought it home twice already, and it doesn't work.
When you say it doesn't work,
I can't connect it because whenever I try, I also have AOL, and I try to insert the disk,
it
shows the modem is not working.
It shows the modem is not working. Okay.
Yeah. It says modem not working.
AOL told me is,
go ahead.
Well, it's really frustrating that they tried setting it up and then failed and, of course, couldn't test it.
And they keep bouncing me back from AOL to them because AOL said it's not AOL because
it's the modem.
I
think you need to find somebody that can help you out at your house with this problem. It's clearly a driver issue. Is this a laptop? It's a MacBook, right?
MacBook, yeah.
So
yeah, it's a MacBook.
I would, since it's so mobile, I would go to a local shop that can help you with your software problem. And I wouldn't be surprised. I know that you're using AOL, and therefore you probably don't have Crusoe, but I wouldn't be surprised if a local ISP like Crusoe could help you out with this.
I mean, competitively, the price that you'd pay for just normally a modem goes into your house, and it's not really part of your computer, and the cost for that is like a DSL modem or a cable modem is comparable in price to what you'd pay for a phone line. Much, much slower. What is it? 56K is what you're really getting out of
But a modem you can use anywhere, including like a hotel.
I just don't want a Wi-Fi in my house. That's all.
Well, you can get DSL and not have Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
You don't need
you
to have
can?
Wi-Fi. Yeah. You
well,
want to do?
How do you do that?
You buy DSL and you make sure not to get a DSL modem with Wi-Fi. And then you plug into it with the port that's on your computer that's not a modem port.
It's
an Ethernet port.
Yeah.
Plug it right in, and you're going to have really, really high speeds, and you never have to have wireless on.
Faster than wireless.
I would have to buy, if I buy a DSL without the wireless.
Yeah, it's not
actually,
totally common.
It's usually cheaper, actually.
Yeah, I think they normally have two different types of modems. You just make sure you don't get a modem with
but
wireless.
But you have to subscribe to a wireless service.
If they make you
get you do?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what?
Wait, no.
No.
You can't buy a DSL modem and not
Have a subscription.
Have a subscription.
Not to wireless, but to DSL service.
Yeah, you have to have a service.
Yeah,
you can get bare DSL as well.
But you still.
But if I don't want to go that route now, what could I do now with this modem that I have? The modem should
return
work,
it.
Right?
if you're going to go with DSL, return the modem. Yeah. The modem should work, though. I got to say, it's one of those things that, you know, I'm looking at the website and they're talking about 10.4 operating system. I don't know what version operating system you're running, that it works. But there's going to be some complication to this process. You know, you're going to – the biggest thing is that there's just not a large purchase base right now for this kind of thing, right? Because everybody's switching over to DSL.
Right.
So it's hard to find the right kind of resources. That's kind of the issue, I think.
Can you recommend anything that – I mean, obviously, I can't – I'm very frustrated. They keep bouncing me back from one to the other.
What I recommend doing is this. I recommend returning that device because they're not helping you. Don't give them your money. And then going to, like, a place where you can get internet and trying to buy something online at Amazon. And the reason I suggest that – you don't have to buy it at Amazon, but go up to Amazon.com. Look for – USB modem OS 10, and look at the reviews on it and make sure that some of the reviews say I had no problem with this on this kind of computer. You'll probably
can
find
you
a
recommend
review.
Of anyone any modem for this MacBook.
No, but this is what I'm telling you is what I would do. I would go up on Amazon.
To go and browse
well,
now.
I would go on Amazon to look at the reviews because the issue is that sure I can find 15 modems that will supposedly do it. But I want the experience of someone like you and how it worked for them. I want to see that 10 people said this worked great on my MacBook. Mm-hmm. And until I see that, I'm not going to trust that it's going to work. Because like Zoom, I don't know if they're going to work or not. Their website's out of date. You know, that's all I know about them. So the testimonials of people and the reviews are great. Now, you don't have to buy it from that company. You don't have to buy it from Amazon. In fact, you might be able to buy it from a local business.
Yeah, there's a million of them. I just typed in MacBook modem in Amazon.
And then Amazon has a rating thing. So you can go and choose by rating and then you're going to know whether this thing's going to work for you before you buy it.
I go to MacBook Amazon?
No. Amazon.com.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then in the search field, just type USB modem OS 10. You guys got to put an OS 10 in there, too.
OS 10.
Yeah.
I just put MacBook modem.
MacBook modem inside there.
And there's a bunch of star ratings. You want one with the most stars.
And the ratings sometimes are about the company that's selling it and also about the product. And then you read the reviews and see if people had problems on their MacBook.
Okay.
And you can absolutely do this, and it would work. I just want to throw it out there that I think it will end up being possibly cheaper and definitely easier going with DSL.
I agree. And you don't have to have wireless to have DSL. DSL is a same type of phone. If it's a phone call conversation, just a computer phone call. It goes over
and
the same phone lines.
And if I wanted to go back through DSL, who would you recommend?
If you're where you live?
Local.
Yeah.
Santa Cruz.
I'm going to go ahead and recommend Crusoe.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's anybody that's doing DSL. I recommend local businesses only because I know that you can walk into their tech support.
Yeah, I want to support local.
That's right. And this
so
is for
DSL,
dial-up.
It would be DSL with wireless.
Without wireless.
Without the Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
All right.
And a good point to have on there is, I realize we're running out of time, but with regard to local, it's not just the ethic of going local. It's the fact that you have a shop that you can walk into and have people help you. That's a great thing. We're just going to plug Cruise IO right there.
And by the way, we just, Helen, I hope you're still listening, but we have a free modem for you. Eric wants to give you a modem. So hopefully you guys will be able to talk. Helen, go ahead and call back the station. Rick will help you out.
that would be even cheaper.
Give you a free modem. There you go. One more call, I think, from Stuart in Watsonville. Stuart, welcome to GeekSpeak. Is this not Stuart? Hello?
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Is this Stuart in Watsonville?
Yeah, I've got a Dell 1521.
Mm-hmm.
And I just added a couple of memory cards to it, one underneath the keyboard and one in the back.
Uh-huh.
And when you go to, you know, where it recognizes the memory, there are two 2 gigabyte cards. And when I go to look at where it recognizes the memory, it only recognizes one of the cards.
Because it's only saying you have 2 gigs?
Right.
Right. Are you sure they're 2 gigabit cards?
Yeah.
Okay.
They say 2 gig right on it.
Miles, you got any very quick responses to this question?
Unfortunately, no. There's a lot of possibilities there.
The first thing to do is shut the machine down, take out one of them, start it back up, and see if it works. And shut the machine down and see how much RAM it says. Shut down the machine again, swap them out.
Yeah, switch places.
Switch places, basically.
Test the RAM.
You're basically going to test the RAM. If you start the machine up 3 different times, right, one with both of them in them and one with each of the types in, you'll know which one is bad. It's very possible it's just a bad memory stick.
It's a common
thing. The reason why you're going to swap them around is that you're not sure if it's the slot that's bad, mm-hmm. the place that you're putting it, or the actual SIM itself.
Right, right.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. I think we've got time for one more quick thing. Miles, you got a quick thing? Okay, Allie, got a quick thing?
I don't know. There's a guy, there's a robocall victim. This guy, Aaron Titus, a father who lives in Maryland, he got a call in the middle of about 4:30 in the morning about from the school board. It was a robocall, you know, a robot calling everybody out saying,
"Kids can't come to school tomorrow.
Don't send your kids to school. It's a snow day." You know, it's 4:30 in the morning. So he was kind of upset about that. So he set up his own robocall and he called the entire Prince George's County School District board and thank them the next day at 4:30 in the morning for the call.
Awesome. And so. Al also has this.
Hi, everyone. This is Al Luckow, and it's time for this week's crazy USB device. Now, I'm not one to be shy around computers. I've seen my share of gadget abusers. What I saw today, I can't really say. This is public radio, and the topic is gray. It's a USB device, that's for sure. But the subject matter is not demure. It's a flash drive, as far as I can see, and it involves a rather small beagle puppy. Now, I know you all have seen dogs do it. It's not like you need some kind of permit, but a USB drive that does this action? All I can say is what a distraction. Assure you folks that this is real, as you know by now, that is the appeal. If you still don't know of what I speak, check our site today after this Geek Speak.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Central Coast. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. Well, that was kind of a tight close of the show. Mm-hmm. I kind of cut that off too quick. And we didn't even get to say something. But what's this thing we're giving away?
Well, we had a drive that we were going to give away. It was over Christmas. We did the Christmas show. And we gave a certain criteria out there for somebody to write in or call in.
It was the holiday parade show that sounded horrible.
Yes, yes.
But then did we talk about it after that?
Yes, we've talked about it various times.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So a good listener should know what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And so there's a drive. And it's a specific kind of drive. If you can tell us, if you can, you know, go to our geekspeak.org.
And this is only for podcasters. We didn't put this on air.
This isn't on air. Yeah. So you could be hearing this for the first time.
Maybe
nobody's going to. So what you need to do is contact us through geekspeak.org and then tell us what kind of drive it was and what was the date. What was the date we were asking for?
Okay, but this is the tricky one is that you could only have heard this if you listened to that horribly recorded holiday show, because we didn't talk about the date again.
Did we list it on our show page?
What was the date, and what's so important about the date? And get the free drive. Okay, that's a lot. That's smart. Yeah. I mean, unless you're a regular listener, you're not going
to
get this.
Okay, so if you're the first one to answer those two questions,
what date it was, and what was special about the date, and And what the hard, what the
and
what, drive
what's
is?
The name of the drive?
What the name of the drive is?
Okay, if you can answer those questions, the first one, we will mail this drive to you. It can be anywhere because we want to make this open to people who
that's
are
right,
all
anywhere.
Over. Because we have so many world listeners, and it's just okay. We'll mail it to you. Okay, we have 1 week. Okay, what's the date today?
Today is January 15th.
Okay, 1 week from today.
We need to hear about before the show, of course, next
right.
week.
Yeah, and if we don't get an email
yeah.
by that show, we're going to have to come up with another thing.
Of course, we
right.
will.
But you got 7 days. So the first one
yeah.
to answer this correctly gets the drive.
And all the answers to this question really are in the Holiday Parade
yeah.
episode. So go listen to that and
yeah.
answer.
It's yeah. tough, and it's a tricky one because
okay.
it's
so
a hard one to listen to.
So there's
this
three
so
questions.
Bad.
What date is it?
Uh-huh.
What's special about that date?
Uh-huh.
And what's the drive?
Right.
What kind of drive is it?
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And of course, this is only you only answer this if you've got a laptop.
Right.
Because this is a laptop drive.
It's a laptop drive yeah.
Or you want to give it to somebody.
Yeah. Mac or PC.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. I didn't say that this week, of course, the geeks were Al, Miles, and myself, Lyle, and thanks for Rick. And also, GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. See you guys next week.